And you're very welcome to another edition of the Solid Foundation Property Podcast. I am, of course, Pádraig Kilfarty, and we don't have Lisa O'Reilly on this month's edition, but we do have a wonderful special guest to tell you all about very shortly indeed. As we're recording this, it's the end of March, kicking into April, and it's the first quarter is over, and hopefully you are hitting your property goals. Each and every month, we bring you the very best and knowledge that we can on the property podcast. That is, of course, very focused on the investment aspect, but also property as a whole. The whole circle of the property industry takes in different factors and takes in different elements as well along the way, all apart from, you know, developing right through to solicitor, tax advice. And then, of course, we did touch on building structures. And I'm delighted to say, and just to be straight up with people, I know this man really, really well. We run the Northwest Property Meet together and is an absolute encyclopedia when it comes to damp, the old damp word. Richard Brown, you're very welcome to the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. And first time for you being on this one, Richard. I don't think it's going to be your last, because damp is a massive issue in the property market.
It is, yeah, and it's I don't know any landlords that haven't had some issue with some form of damp over the years, and the rules and regulations are getting more tighter on what's going to be expected of landlords and to protect their property users from dampness, which has been in the headline news quite a lot over the last 2-3 years.
And suppose, Richard, that's been driven by that unfortunate incident in Manchester, and everybody, our podcast goes out across Ireland, Northern Ireland, all over the world, basically. So it affects every business, or every property, I should say, and every landlord. And suppose it's something that's very dear to your heart. You know, you've been pioneering this message for years now, since I know you. But tell us about that, first of all, about that situation and how it came about.
Well, it was, for those who don't know, there was a social housing organisation in Rochdale, and that was it was a multi-storey flat complex, and there was a young toddler, 2 years old, that actually fell ill and died as a result. Now, this was actually created legal history because it was the first time in UK legal history that a coroner actually made a definitive link between mold in a property and someone dying. Up until that stage, there had never been a judgment made on that. And that's why to date, we've never had a successful prosecution in the UK for mold inhalation, because there was never any legal precedent on it. Now, in America, in the States, this is huge, huge business. We actually, you'll actually see television adverts, mold is gold, where there's legal representatives, solicitors, lawyers, etc., and that's their sole business. They litigate against landlords for mold constantly. In the UK, the majority of the cases are actually settled out of court, but it really is only a matter of time. And I think this is now going to be the watershed moment where this is going to end up in front of a judge at some point, and there is going to be convictions on it.
Serious issue, and something, like as I say, it's something you do forget about, you know, and it happens in a lot of, I suppose in your properties, Richard, not so much, but when you're looking at what property investors or landlords buy and they redevelop, and you know, there's those issues. Let's look at a couple of these examples. And I know, suppose people who maybe are more visual will have to go and do a wee Google research on these as well. But I'm a local property investor. I go to a property and view it, and first of all, you see that black mold element on the building and up the sides of the walls, and yeah, once people see that's a big indication of some type of damp. So maybe we'll start there. we spoke off air earlier on just about, you know, the impact that some people have and when they look into damp and they just don't understand it, Rich, and it could put you off a deal as well.
Of course you can, yeah. I mean, black molds, well, all molds, it shouldn't frighten anyone because there's a very strong, well-worn path actually to deal with it. Part of the problem is that we either don't want to deal with it or we're afraid to look into the science behind it, which, again, people believe is actually quite complicated, but it's not complicated at all. And it can be solved very, very easily. So when you walk into a property that you're hoping to buy or whatever, and you see black mold, it's just treated as an issue that can be fixed relatively easy. But the important thing is you have to want to fix it. And it's not about passing the buck on down the line and blaming somebody else for it. It is actually quite easy to solve as long as you have the education and the basic knowledge of what to do. But yeah, there's dampness is in most buildings, and the majority of them are relatively easy fixed, but you have to want to fix them.
And suppose that's one thing that you do see, Rich, first of all, you go in and you see the damp. It does necessarily scare some individuals, but as you've always indicated, like a property breeze, and it's maybe the issue that's there currently could be drying clothes. Give us some practical elements where you would see damp and why it's in a property.
Well, the major issue in the properties, especially in the UK and Ireland, is the C word, the condensation, which nearly always results in black mold. So that's the one that we come up against the most, and certainly my work as a surveyor is probably about 70% dealing with condensation. Now, there's a lot of myths around condensation, and until the myths are actually explored, we're not going to be able to solve it properly. The other forms of damp that we have is penetrating damp and rising damp. And then we've got good old-fashioned leaking pipes. And it's of the utmost importance that you're able to actually identify which one is which. Now, I know rising damp is treated a lot, which it shouldn't be, because I'm not one of these ones that says there is no such thing as rising damp, because there is, but it's definitely not as a big an issue as what we're led to believe with the damp industry. And there's definitely not the same numbers that has been portrayed in the media about rising damp this and rising damp that. Just because you have damp at a low level doesn't mean to say it's rising damp. So when you're out surveying a property or having a look at a property for the first time, and maybe you're thinking about buying it and you see black mold at skirting board level, don't immediately jump onto the, oh, it's rising damp, let's keep away from it. Because again, it's, even if it is rising damp, which it's most likely not to be if there's black mold, but even if it is, it's more than easily sorted, especially if the property is void at the time or vacant. We can always sort it out for you. So don't run away.
And so, suppose an area that's fairly effective, you know, that was the next question coming on to that, you know, the health impact. And I know we touched on it earlier on about that. When does it come to a stage as a landlord? Like, I know, I suppose there's two hats here. There's, you know, you're looking at a property as an investment, and you're looking at out for damp. But then you're a landlord here. So first of all, the landlord aspect is, like, could be listening to this. How do they start to ratify the problem from your point of view? What kind of practical steps can they start taking, maybe with their tenants?
Right. So the very first thing, as I say, going back, condensation tends to be the first or the most obvious issue that a lot of landlords are actually having a problem with. The first thing as a practical step is I don't want any landlord jumping to the conclusion that if there's condensation in a property, it's the tenant's fault, okay? It's condensation is normally as a result of several issues rather than one issue. If someone was to push me and say, what is the biggest bang for your buck that you can get to prevent condensation in a tenant's property, I would say it would be spending money on decent extractor fans. I'll give you an example. This week, I've had numerous, all my surveys this week have been condensation related, which is over 30 surveys. And as part of that survey, we always test extractor fans. Now, of those 30 properties surveyed, 100% failed on extractor fans. So if you're not getting moisture out of a property, you're going to have condensation. And it's not actually a tenant's fault if an extractor fan's not working. The extractor fan must be working, and it must be working to a set level. Just because it's making the noise doesn't mean you say it's extracting at the right level. So 100%, and I very rarely have that level drop below 90%. So as a practical step, as a landlord, invest in a good extractor fans in bathrooms, kitchens, all wet areas, en suites, utility rooms, etc.
And suppose everything's cost. Well, like cost of something like that, it's minimal, Richard, in the grand scheme of things.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's a lot, especially in terms of extractor fans, without getting too technical, there's ones on the market now that are hygrometrically controlled, which means they only engage when there's enough moisture. You know, so they do tend to be a lot more expensive, but in terms of efficiency and even keeping noise levels down, they're excellent, because as I say, they will only turn on when moisture levels get above a certain level. The biggest problem with extractor fans that I've found over the years is they get knocked off by tenants, home property users, etc., because you're waking up in the middle of the night to go to the toilet and you flick the light on and suddenly the extractor fan comes on and then the baby wakes up and blah, blah, blah. You know, so the extractor fan is turned off. Whereas if you have a hygrometrically controlled fan, unless you've got a pretty potent pee, it's not going to switch it on. If it's going to switch it on, I think you need to go to the doctors anyway. So the hygrometrically controlled ones are really, really good, because as I say, it means you can run it when it needs to be run rather than just have it running all the time.
And looking at those costs, you know, suppose it comes with the review of the actual property first of all, but 9 times out of 10, you know, it's pretty much the same element, you know, that you come across, or, you know, on those surveys, condensation last week, if we take that for example, what's the average cost to fix the problems that you've kind of reviewed?
Well, it's you've got the actual tangible costs in terms of killing mold. Maybe you end up, as a result of it, you've got rot forming on skirting boards, etc. You know, so the cost can actually be pretty high, but then you have the intangible costs where you're actually, you know, your tenant, the property user, is constantly giving you a hard time because they've got mold. So you're always on the phone and you're always researching this, and you know, that's money, that's time. That is actually money that's stopping you as a property investor going out and finding other properties. They also then have the stress because they're threatening to go legal, or they're going to bring in environmental health and blah, blah, blah. So to put a cost on that is really, really difficult. But for the sake of, as I say, an extractor fan at £100 that's hygrometrically controlled, if you have one of those working constantly in your house in all your wet areas, the amount of hassle that can take off you is immeasurable, because these things will last a long time if you service them as well. If the whole ethos is to stop the mold, we're going to stop the water. And if we're stopping the water, we can do that by extracting the water at source in our kitchens, in our bathrooms. And I'm not one of these ones now that say we shouldn't be drying clothes on radiators, because having clean, dry clothes is a basic human right. And I'll give you an example. On a lot of the properties I'm actually surveying, especially in a social housing area, you're walking into a kitchen and there's room for a washing machine and that's it. There's no tumble dryer. And they've got no outside washing line. They've got no secure outside area to do. And never mind that, there's only about 3 days a year in this country where we can dry clothes outside anyway. So what are we supposed to do if we've got young families? Well, it doesn't even matter if we've got young families. If you have no facility to dry clothes outside, what are we going to do about this? Good extraction.
You have no choice.
Make it easy for them.
Yeah, you have no choice, and everybody has a clothes dryer somewhere in the house, and it's just part of life. If you don't have that space to dry them, or a shade or something like that, and it's a great point. It's just a very simple point at that too as well, Rich. And I suppose the other part of investing that we didn't touch on is just the impact on your investment if you're not looking at the upkeep of your property, because if you go to sell that, there's damp issues with it straight away. It's, you know, mortgageless. You will be put into the cash buyer, and your market's more limited to there. So initially, it's within your own interest to do something like this to ensure it's kept well.
It is, and again, I think it goes back to landlords or property investors actually being afraid of the unknown in terms of, I have damp. How am I going to fix it? And they believe that it's difficult, so they bury their head in the sand. And then when it comes to the point when they have to repair it because they're trying to sell it, it's already too far down the line. The vast majority of damp problems are actually fairly simply solved. The magic is actually in the diagnosis, which is some of the stuff I do. But you know, not burying your head in the sand. The minute you find out you have a damp problem, tackling it then, because I can tell you now, it's a hell of a lot less stressful tackling it at the early stages rather than at the latter stages, because you will end up with mold. You will end up with rot. You will end up with woodworm. And once them things take a hold, get your checkbook out, boy, because it's expensive to fix.
It definitely is. And I suppose just touching on those couple of things, it's raising the awareness on the damp issue, the mold issue, the woodworm issue that you've touched in as well. And I suppose getting work completed now, it's probably like everything else, it's become a challenge. I know your company RBBA specialize in it, Rich, but that aspect is getting things done is taking a lot longer, and with the new regulations that's coming in place for this as well, it's a battle to have the right resources within the market, and that's something that you're really passionate about trying to fix.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm having loads of trouble myself actually getting tradesmen on the ground to do repairs and do the right repairs. But it's going to start. It has to start with us. It has to start with the property investors. It has to start with the landlords. We have to set this bar now that we're not going to accept damp, and we have to take action on making sure we are educated enough to take the right action at the right time. When you rent a property out, we rent a property out to someone, we're renting a house out. Okay, it doesn't matter. And a lot of the times we've just bought the house, there's no attachment to it other than our finance, but you're actually passing it on to someone that's going to be their home. They're going to hopefully raise a family in it. They're going to have kids running about. They're going to spend Christmas morning, and they're going to blah, 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 do all this stuff. So it's going to be a home. We have to create a safe environment for them. If we're not going to do that, and if we're just going to take the money, then I'm sorry, you're going to impact quite a few lives. So as landlords, as property investors, we have a duty to be professional in our business. And if you start off with your first property, you've only got one property at that stage, let's get into the routine there and then of being a responsible landlord, because there's plenty out there who are not responsible, and they're ruining people's lives as well by not fixing mold, by not fixing damp, and having inadequate heating systems, etc., etc.
And I suppose it'll bring me on to my next aspect. You've put together something that you just got the word on there during the week. You've put together a 3-day course to really intensely look at this, because you feel that there's very little out there that property investors can actually use to educate themselves on this particular subject.
Yeah, the damp industry itself, it's a very emotional industry where we can actually, and I say we because I'm a member of the damp industry myself, we can actually use emotions, especially the fear with landlords, to force them to write blank checks because we can tell them they've got rising damp, and that immediately instills this huge issue in their brain of, oh God, I've got, then my house is going to fall down because I've got rising damp. I want to take landlords and property investors to the stage now where we're not, they're not going to be getting hoodwinked by the damp proofing industry. And they are going to have the ability to sort of make their own decisions, because we all have to take advice of someone at some point. But I think we have to take, we have a duty as well to be a little bit educated in the field that we're in. And if we're renting out properties, we need to know a little bit about damp. We need to know a little bit about structure. We need to know a little bit how the heating system works. We need to know a little bit about how the electric system works. I am not asking anyone to go and rewire a house here, by the way, but I do feel if we're taking money off people to allow them to live in our properties, we need to have a little bit of knowledge. And that's what we're releasing this training program for. It's a 3-day event. And it's mainly focused on damp, rising damp, penetrating damp, condensation, woodworm, how we tell the difference between the two of them. It is not a degree qualification. We're not looking for scientists here. This is a very, very, very basic training course that we're going to put people through just to hopefully help them on their property journey.
Yeah, it's exciting for everyone that's interested. I know you've released it there during the week at the Northwest Property Meet, and huge response to it. A lot of people want to know, and you know, majority of individuals who care will want to definitely dip their toe into this, because there is loads of other aspects, and it helps you with negotiation. It also helps you understand structural and how that will impact the building. And again, around that, the market has over 24,000 or 23,000 houses lying empty. And that's just in Northern Ireland. In Southern Ireland, I think it's up 160, I think, just by from what Lisa used to say. So the impact of this, as well as some of the work that's actually happening at government to bring back property in the south, and you know, also in the north, there's a drive on to try and do that. But the important thing is that whenever you're buying empty or old buildings, you have to, and I suppose I know because we're just going through it currently with a listed building that we've purchased and redeveloping. The first person I got on the phone was yourself, Rich, because you're part of that power team for me to understand, well, look, this is going to cost X amount, you know, on this building. So you need to factor that into your numbers. So it's back into the investment calculator you have to go. Isn't that, I suppose, that's a real life situation there, Rich?
Absolutely. And if you think about it as well, if you're saying, you know, the 24,000 unused properties in Northern Ireland alone, never mind what's going on south of the border, we've got a huge problem with a huge housing crisis in this country, massive housing crisis. And if we were able to put 24,000 properties back on the market, even if you're able to put half of those back on the market, in a good, usable, dry condition, you know, we're going a long way to actually solving the housing crisis. And again, maybe this is my liberal side of me coming through, but I believe everybody is entitled to a home. And
absolutely,
it's not just about, what are you crying about here? You've got a roof over your head. No, we have a right to a decent quality room where we can, you know, spread our wings, where we can actually enjoy life, because you know, we spend a lot of time there, and your property that you're just chatting about there, once that gets up and running, there's, I don't know how many rooms, is it 13 rooms?
Yeah, it's going to be 10 plus the an outhouse at the moment, but yeah, apartments going in there, so it's going to be 13 families hopefully looked after, yeah.
There's 13 people we're going to, you know, put in a home where they can actually start having a wee bit of self-respect for themselves and, you know, set down roots, and you're bringing people to the city, in my case, Derry, Londonderry, because you're not saying the people that's coming there might not necessarily be residents of the city. So we're going to be bringing workers, doctors, etc. into the city as well. So everybody benefits from, and it all starts with what you've done. And I could not do what you do because I like a minimal amount of work that way. But seeing an old shell and fixing it up and putting it back into reuse is just, it's an incredible skill to have. And it's something I don't know if I would have the patience to do, but yeah.
You need a lot of patience, and it's not just me. I have a really good team, and you know, it's all of those factors bringing it all back in, and suppose that's what the end vision for all these things is. You're given something that people can actually live in, and that's for me a massive value. Look, there is an element of investment in the back of it. You know, you have to understand that the area is moving in the right direction for investment, and that has to be, you should try and use as pull as many levers as you possibly can on the educational side of things, that, you know, all the different elements are moving in the right direction. And it's exciting for the area that there's growth. But you're right, Richard, on the factor that there's a housing crisis. And sometimes it's beggar's belief that when you've got a housing crisis on one hand, and unfortunately, I don't like giving out about anyone, but planners on the other side, and you're stuck in the middle. And I feel for them sometimes. They're trying to make a judgment on something, and all the other tactical elements that come around that can be very, very strenuous, and you're trying to understand what they might come with and how you have to maybe structure your proposal and mission statement that it is going to, you know, really add value. Everything's object, and you know, and everything's object, and sometimes that can get very frustrating. And from a way of moving the needle in the right direction for getting more people housing, and it's never been such a crisis as you've indicated, and utilities, as I've said many times, is causing issue as well. But again, look, from an investor's point of view, you've been in the market over the last number of years, and maybe we'll touch on that now, Richard. Suppose with your specialist hat off, you started your journey in property a long time ago. You've got a few bumps and bruises along the way.
Oh, I've got, I don't think, bumps and bruises, and I've made some mistakes and whatnot, but if there is such a thing as good mistakes, I've definitely made them, because I think property is very, very forgiving because of the situation regarding housing. I don't think you can actually make a bad choice at the minute, because there is such a shortage of property. So if you can get something back on the market, in this town, in Derry, Londonderry, a very good friend of mine always says to me, you could rent a leaky shed in Derry. And that's basically the way things are. I've got a few properties. I've made mistakes on them, but they've been good mistakes, and they've certainly been educational mistakes as well. And don't get me wrong, guys, I have properties that are damp as well, but I don't bury my head in the sand, and I always tackle them. My first property was bought years and years and years ago. Give an indication of my age if I tell you, but I wasn't involved in property at that stage. Actually, I was involved in retail, and I took the jump, and I've never looked back since.
Talk us about that journey. I suppose it was a time when you reflect back on it, Richard. You're involved in, you know, what you were doing now, more specifically, and getting your property itched. How did that come about?
Well, I was actually working in retail at the time, and I bought my first property, and it was very, very small. It was tiny. It was just myself and my partner at the time, and it was really, really tiny. And we got this stage where we thought we needed a wee bit more elbow room, and although I qualified in the construction industry as a building surveyor, I had no idea about property whatsoever but buying and selling property. So we went to our estate agent to try and sell our property so we could buy this bigger property. And I remember the estate agent putting us on to a mortgage broker, and he said to us, well, why are you selling this property? Why don't you just remortgage it, keep it, rent it out, and buy another house with the money that you've made? And it's like, oh, I never knew we could do that. So we did that. We followed the path. We did made our first, and very quickly. I actually remember, I don't know if any of you guys would remember this company, but it was called Inside Track. I won a radio competition to attend one of their 3-day events on property investing. And I answered a question. I can't remember what the question was now, but I got invited to myself and my partner were taken to this property sales event, and how to buy and sell properties, little useful techniques, how it all works. And from that, it was just, we were taught how to leverage money, other people's money, using banks' money to increase our property portfolio. And we've never really looked back since. Now we're getting into other areas of property investment, rent-to-rent, which is quite profitable. And I know we touch a lot on that in the property networking event that we host. But there's more than one way, and I've learned now, more than one way to skin a cat. So money shouldn't be an issue for anyone anymore in buying and selling property and increasing a property portfolio.
Yeah, and you've done that, I suppose, locally, and you've moved over to the UK as well in the last in the last couple of years.
Liverpool, Manchester, Redcar. We've got Belfast as well, and we've got here in the city. So, yeah, and actually the rent-to-rent is very, very exciting. And I think a lot of people try and shy away. Well, it's not that they try and shy away. They just don't understand that it's actually out there, and we do touch a lot on it. So I would say anybody interested in on the property market without having a lot of money should come and we would chat to us about rent-to-rent, because it's a massive way of gaining some, putting some money in your pocket, or build a war chest, I think you called it at one point. So you can invest. I find quite good.
It's moving the structures that there's something for everyone. You know, if you've got the will, and I think that's the thing that we try and unlock with a lot of the people that come to the Northwest Property Meet, is unlocking that will. The information is there. The drive needs to be there too, intensely. And I think you've been very flippant about what you've achieved, Richard, because obviously there's Belfast, I have Derry, Londonderry, I have the UK as well, and all of that really just doesn't happen by thinking. And you know, we also pioneer that you have to do. There's no point talking, you have to do. And we all have to do. I know me and you have been having a discussion about it. Maybe we're not doing enough over the last 6 months as well, but it's so important. And if you were starting out again, what is that type of advice you would give, Richard, to maybe a younger Richard who's maybe thinking about getting into property?
The advice I would give me now is you don't need money to get involved in property. I know that sounds ridiculous, but you do not need cash in your own bank to get into money. There is tons of ways, dozens of ways where we can actually buy a property with actually not one penny of our own money. We can take control of properties without not one penny of our own without our own money. But you have to be able to educate yourself. It's not going to be given to you. It's the education, it's the education, it's the education. And then when you get the education, it's the action, it's the action, it's the action. You have to do what you've been. Everybody can read a book, but it just becomes a book if you don't do anything what you've been told in the book.
And it's the seed analogy that I really get. You know, like people are, with all the social medias of this world now, it's kind of, you know, you become a millionaire in a week and all this, or a year, whatever. But I think it's the consistent, you know, showing up to the meets, showing up to the the learnings, or if you've got a mentor, if you get that far, you know, and moving the dial as you get older. And sometimes, you know, you look back and you think you're not moving forward, but if you're not doing those basic elements, first of all, getting out there, talking to people who's doing what you'd like to do. And I know we have a young guy, Jason, who comes to the Northwest property, 22 years of age, has discussions about what he's going to do, very, very focused and very driven, and my word, what he is going to achieve. And that is so important. There's people out there who will help you with your goal, no matter who it is. And Richard, if someone was looking to reach out to have a conversation with you and maybe to discuss their strategy, you've kind of done them all now at this stage.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, again, just going back on what you said as well, another element that would probably say to a young Richard is it's not just about having the money in your bank account, but you don't need to know, okay? You need to be actually the one who knows least, if you like, because you'll always build your power team. You're always chatting about a power team. I don't need to know how the conveyancy works. Couldn't care less, to be perfectly honest. I don't need to know about the tax side of things. Could not care less about it. I employ people for that. One of the benefits of having the networking, that the amount of knowledge we have in our little group is unbelievable, where if I have a query, I can lift the phone. If I have a query about mortgages, I can lift the phone and speak to Sam, Billy, or Roof. If I have a query about the legalities of something, I can lift the phone and speak to William, or how am I going to rent this property? I can speak to Neil. I don't need to know that stuff. I just pass the problem on down the line. So it's not, don't sit there and think that I'm this brave soul that it just cracks on and does it. It's not that way. I just know I have this huge backup behind me. If anything goes wrong, I can just pass the problem on.
And that's the thing. There's always, again, there's always there's an element of fear within the property market because of that 2004, 2006 crash. We were all caught in it. We all know. We all have the scars. We've talked to the people, you know. So it's about learning, and it's about going back in that education side of it and really digging into that first of all. Rich, look, it's been great chatting to you. You're launching the course the next couple of months, I do believe. I know we've discussed about an online element as well, because people can actually do the training online eventually. Once, as you said to me, you're waiting until you got comfortable with it as well, because which I don't think you'll have a problem. I think one take, you'll be fine. But it's exciting in a way that you're going to launch this and people can actually do the training at home, basically, as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, nothing beats actually being out on site as well, and that's the next step in the development. We're going to take people out on site. We're very lucky to have Neil Patterson as part of the group, and he has numerous properties where we can actually do site training as well. So it's not just going to be all theory. And the my goal personally is to train up potential landlords with loads of experience, for them to be able to walk out on site and know what a problem is that they see and not to be frightened of it. Because the more houses we put back into the market, if you like, the more people's going to have homes, the more people's going to gain security, self-respect, etc., and go through that thing that is important to me. That, as I say, people actually have security in their in where they're living, etc. So yeah, it is exciting. I just don't quite know how it's all going to fit together just yet. The way I work things is I just crack on, and it'll be all right on the night.
So we're looking forward to the test drive very shortly. Really looking forward to that. And we will, of course, keep everyone updated on the podcast here as well once that comes live. And Richard has actually got it up online, and you can definitely touch base with Richard. So for anyone who wants to get in contact with you, Richard, what's the best way? Is it the Facebook page or...?
Yeah, the Facebook page is always it is extremely busy at the minute, and I am not coming back to people straight away, but I do eventually come back. WhatsApp's always quite good. I very rarely answer the phone nowadays. I'm getting an unbelievable amount of spam telephone calls. So I'm asking people to contact me by text and tell me what it is they're looking for, and then, you know, speaking to them then afterwards. But it's, yeah, what the Facebook page, WhatsApp, email, always the best way.
We'll stick it up on the show notes as well, and you can reach out to Richard, Richard Brown from RBBA, a damp specialist, and well, he's going to go into the chittering world as well, and we're looking forward to telling you all about that. Well, that's all we have time for today on the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. Big thank you to our sponsors, of course, City Stays. Lisa and her company, City Stays, is Ireland's leading provider of customized accommodation solutions, specifically designed for contractor teams working on projects all across Ireland. So reach out to Lisa on that. She's doing an amazing job. And also Gap Property Investments. Well, we help you get your money making a good return as well than sitting in the bank. If you want to get in contact with us, you can do that, gappropertyinvestments.com. Richard, it's been fantastic having you on the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. We will be talking to you very shortly indeed, and do check out Richard's Facebook as well. He puts up some really exciting videos each and every week. So well done, Richard. Thanks very much for joining.
Thank you. Cheers.